Hey guys, it's Tim here. Have you ever struggled with the income you make teaching music? Have you ever felt guilty teaching after school and on weekends and missing out on family dinners and activities during the week? Have you ever wondered if there was a way you could create income that didn't rely on your teaching? Well, I wanted you to be the first to know about a very special series of emails that I've started sharing this week. It's a short 4-part video package called Music Teacher Income Secrets. And in it, I've been unpacking the difficulties many of us face maintaining a sustainable income through private studio teaching. I've already released videos 1 and 2, and next week in the series, I'm going to be offering a solution that I've never shared before and that may be a perfect fit for you. If you haven't been getting these emails or you'd like to catch up on the series, then make sure you sign up now by going to timtopham.com/secrets.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome back to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, Season 2, 2019. This is your weekly dose of creative inspiration, fun conversation, and teaching tactics for your studio. We're going to help keep you motivated and inspired as you teach and run your business and give you the confidence you need to explore new ideas, teach more creatively, and grow the studio of your dreams. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and you're listening to episode number 165. And I'd like to extend a very special welcome to my Inner Circle piano teaching community members. Hi, guys. Today's episode is pretty epic because my guest, you may have seen him online. He's got a pretty good profile as he helps other studio owners build big studios. And by big, I mean really big. My guest today has built a school which teaches up to 2,000 students a week. Yes, you didn't hear that wrong. That is correct. My guest today is the director of Good Time Music and CEO of the Good Time Foundation over in New Zealand. There's lots more to his bio, but I think he will explain everything you need to know when you get to know him. So over to my interview. Well, welcome to the show, Johnny Wilson. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Hey, thanks, Tim. You too, man.
Now, everyone listening is going to go, what on earth is this guy's accent? Where is this from? Where are you, mate?
I am from Wellington, the capital of New Zealand, or New Zealand, as people like to tell us. That's how we sound.
It already sounded like that, so you didn't need to repeat it.
I don't need to say it. Thanks,
bro. It's good to have, so us Aussies call you guys Kiwis, so I'm going to say it's good to have you a Kiwi on the show. I haven't had too many in the interviews, so it's nice to have a different accent.
And us Kiwis call you guys jerks.
No. Oh, there's such a good rivalry. It's yeah. So silly, isn't it? Well, look, mate, you have a ridiculously big music enterprise. When I asked you to create a walkthrough video of your premises, your music school for my members, I was not expecting what you ended up showing me. It was on another level altogether, which is why I wanted to talk to you today and share how you've got where you are with teaching anywhere up to about 2,000 students in your school, which is just amazing. So can you give us a quick overview of how your school looks today with admin staff, number of teachers, number of students, that sort of thing?
Sure. Yeah, so we have about 40 staff who are 40 to 45 staff who are paid. And then on top of that, we have another 20 volunteers that come in every week. So we would have, I would be at the top being the academy director. I have a personal assistant that helps keep everything organized with me. We have an administrative assistant that manages a team of 4 or 5 administrators. We have a media team that helps with all our video production and website and memberships and design stuff. We have a schools program team that goes into schools doing all sorts of programs. We've got music buses that kitted out as like mobile classrooms, which is pretty cool. And then we have the standard sort of private tuition team, and they're doing, you know, your classic instrument tuition at a more higher level, plus band classes and concerts. And then we have so that's our sort of main business. And then we've set up as a social enterprise because that's what I'm passionate about. And so we have a charitable arm, and that's all running today, which is really exciting. And so we have a team of I think, three or four staff that head that up, and they are in charge of managing 20 volunteers and growing it to a whole lot more. And we've got about 40, 50 kids that come in for free scholarships, music tuition, mentoring, and scaling that up as well. So the team's quite big, and different managers and team leaders. And so I think there's, and right down to cleaners who are students. And so we're all big about leadership development. So there's some people working here that have come through as students, studied, become, you know, private tutors, then become, you know, private tuition manager and other roles. So, yeah, it's really grown from where I started.
No kidding. We're going to find out where you started in a moment. While I let everyone listening pick their jaws up off the floor and put them back in their mouth. It's mind-blowing all the different things that you're doing. And I should, are you happy to tell everyone how old you are?
Yeah, no problem. I'm 35.
Incredible. And what age were you when you started teaching your first student on your own?
I dabbled a bit with like one or two students that had just seen me play in little rock bands and church bands and things like that. And so I taught maybe a couple students for the first few years, from maybe like 18 years old till 20 years old.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it's really easy, and I don't want people to be put off by hearing where Johnny's at now and thinking, oh, this, like, that's great for Johnny, well done, but like I would never get there. That's just crazy. Yeah. But I want to remind everyone that you started as a teacher somewhere way back. So I want you to take us right back to when you first started teaching. You didn't have all these team members. You didn't have a professional space to use. How did it look, and how did you get into teaching originally?
Yeah, cool. So I really quickly, I went to high school like most people. For us, that's sort of 13 to 18 years old. I was awful. I hated it. I skipped a lot of school. I didn't want to be there. I failed almost everything in the last few years. I felt like I had no skills or talents. All my friends were like super smart and they had everything lined up. When I finished school, I felt like I had no skills, but I had a drumming teacher. My school started off with me teaching the drums, and he was such an amazing mentor to me that I thought, man, I just want to be like that guy. And so he said, hey, pursue this music thing. You got to do a lot of work, but start that and you'll be able to take it somewhere. And so I started by doing a music degree, and then I taught my way through university with having about 15 private students on the side.
And this is drums?
I taught the drums. I did jazz performance, majoring drums.
Right.
And yes, I taught to pay my way through university. And then when I finished, I realized, man, I love this more than being trying to be a rock star or a jazz star or something. I just want to make a cool music teaching business. And when I started, like, I had no ambition to want to build something like what we have now. I just wanted to like be able to earn a living doing what I did. Mm. And so I played gigs and covers bands and weddings and corporate things, and I taught drums, and I built it up to about maybe 30 students and a few high schools during the day on top of that. And the big moment that changed my life, Tim, was I was playing these covers gigs, right? I don't know, did you ever play, you know, the pubs and the club scene at all?
I didn't. I did a little bit of, I was more into musical theatre accompanying for things like that. So that was more my gig when I was at uni.
Yeah, you're more high class than me, Tim. I was playing in these pubs. I had this one day, and I was I would teach at, it was actually my old high school. I would teach the drums there all day till 3 o'clock. Then I would race home to my private studio, and I would teach from 4 o'clock till 7:30, I think. And then I'd pack down my drums and a PA system. I would race into the city about 30 minutes away. I would set up for a jazz gig that I had to play. I would play that. I think it was 8:30 to, or maybe it was 9 to 11. Yeah, there was a 2-hour window. I did a jazz gig. And then I raced to a club, which was like the student bar. And I played from 11:30 p.m. at night till 3 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was my Wednesday for like a year.
Oh.
And I looked around. I was exhausted, but I was still kind of young and pumped. And back then I was fit, and I'd literally take like a protein bar and a sandwich to the gig. And but the moment things changed for me is I looked around, and all the covers bands sort of got to know each other. You'd pop in and see each other on the strip, on the breaks. And there were guys, Tim, that were like 50 years old, old enough to be my parents, and they were living the same life as me. And I saw, I just kind of got this glimpse of my future. It was like, yeah, I'm a great teacher and like I can play gigs, but do I really want to be doing this when I'm 50 years old? And
yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I figured I need to think bigger, and that's where things changed. And I decided, yeah, I'm going to do something else.
Right. Okay. And so at that stage, the lessons that you were teaching, you said you're in a school and you were doing some at, was it at home or did you have a location?
Just like a little garage that I had egg cartons on the walls, you know, the classic,
classic
poor man's garage, you know?
Yeah. And, in your parents' house, I assume, or you were living.
Yeah, it was kind of, I was actually boarding with a family. My parents moved to Australia and I didn't want to go. So I boarded with a family and I used their garage for
a while. Wow.
So yeah, a couple of years there until I built something up and then it kicked me out to go, you know, find a commercial space.
Got it. So you had this kind of revelation one night at 3 a.m, realizing that's not the way you wanted to go. What did you then do to start yourself on this new trajectory?
I think I realized that so many people would only ever do they would fill up their time and think they've kind of made it. And so, but then if they want a sick day, well, there's no one to cover. So they're kind of their own worst enemy, right? They might have all this freedom, but really I realized I don't actually own a business. Like I thought, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a, you know, self-made businessman. That's not a business. That's owning a job. And so yeah. I realized if I wanted to build a business, I actually needed to have someone else helping me. And so I realized I need to be able to work. It's the classic, I need to move from working in the business to on the business. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough to have a student that was just about to go off and do the same music degree that I did. And so I said to him, hey man, I paid my way through university teaching drums. I'd like to help you do the same. It's going to be a heck of a lot better than working at a supermarket or a cafe. Are you in? And he was like, yep, I'm in. And, so I stepped back from a couple days a week, and then he picked those students up and we transitioned it. And so now I had 2 days free to start putting my time into building something. And my own, and at that time, my only ambition was to try and build like a really cool drum school. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'll help this guy out. Maybe we'll get another tutor, build a second room, and that'll be amazing. And so that was that first stage.
Wow. And right from the beginning, you were able to charge the parents of your tutor's children enough to give you a little bit of profit and pay him?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of the numbers back then. It was probably like lessons were probably about $25 or $30 an hour. And I think I might have paid him $30 to $40 an hour and I kept the rest.
Yep.
Obviously wasn't very professionally organized back then, and that comes later.
But yes, absolutely. But yeah, it kind of gave you the start.
It was probably like 2/3 for him, 1/3 for me, something like that.
Yeah. And you were able to do that in this garage, or did you, as soon as you hired him, you found a commercial space?
So we did it in the garage at that point, and so we shared the days because I was working playing these gigs that often be Friday, Saturday nights, so I never wanted to work weekends. So he was... There was heaps of kids wanting to do Saturdays. So that Saturday was a great option. Then I dropped another day. So it didn't really affect me too much in terms of my income. It actually boosted my income.
Yeah.
And then, so we had it happening in that one studio. And then there was another room where we had the option to actually do this space up and have this extra room. And so we did that as well.
So it's still in the same house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Wow. That's very convenient.
So you can see why they were on
behalf of the people you were boarding with too. That's
yeah, you can see why they wanted to kick us out a bit later on.
Yeah. So you did up the second room. So you've got the garage, you've got the second room. You hired then, I assume, a second teacher at some stage. How long after the first did you hire a second person?
So the first year was just the two of us. And then the next year we added two more tutors. So it was one more student that came from me. And then that first tutor I had was called Nathan. And as I mentioned, he went off to university.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
And he found a classmate who was an amazing drummer as well. And so we hired him. And that guy ended up staying with me for 7 years and becoming one of my top managers, and built another school.
Oh, that's cool.
This guy, you need a whole podcast on him. He obviously learned everything that we did here. He left and said, "Hey, I'm going to move 2 hours away and plant my own school," and shortcutted all my mistakes. I obviously gifted him all our resources. He built a school. He only left maybe a year ago. He's got 300 students in a year and a bit.
Wow, that's amazing. There you go. Your systems obviously work, Johnny.
Well, he didn't have to pay for all the expensive mistakes I made.
That's true. Yeah. So what was the where were you getting students from? Because you must have had a bit of a trickle of new inquiries to be able to know that you could have a second teacher.
Yeah. So we did all sorts of crazy things. We made up flyers and did mail drops back then, and we did, you know, a little bit of social media, and we did concerts out in schools. We did some drum demonstrations. Those were always the best. Word of mouth. We were quite well known as local musicians, and I think even one of the things that so many people don't do is they actually just don't tell people, like, "Hey guys, I'm starting this thing. It's going to be really awesome. Can you just tell everyone? Do you mind just sharing this?" And not just doing a Facebook post like, "Hey, can you just share this, everyone?" No one wants that spam. It's like getting the the bulk message where you're tagged with
100 other people. Yeah,
you just literally talk to every single person you know with a personalized intro in the first line of the email or the Facebook message. And so we just got heaps of people just sharing, "This is what we're doing," and we just got out. And within those 2 years, those two rooms, I think we got to, because the first year we only built from 30 students when I started to about 45, and the second year it got to about 100, because I remember having at the end of the year, "We just passed 100 students, amazing."
Oh, very cool, yeah. That must have been pretty crowded in two rooms. Although you were teaching yourself as well, weren't you? Just a small amount?
Yeah. So what I did is I was teaching Monday to Thursday, and I dropped a day every year. And then I dropped down to one day, and I put all my best students on that day. And then I said, "I'll teach you until you finish high school and your parents stop paying for you." And so I continued to teach them for maybe 3 more years and dwindled down. And then I haven't taught students since.
Right.
It's probably 45 years ago.
Yeah. But the impact you're now having is remarkable. So even if you were teaching yourself, you're now having an impact on far more kids, which I think is really, really powerful. I'm keen to know, how did you know when was right, and what did you do to find your first external space when you were kicked out of the garage? Tell us about that process.
Yeah, that's... That is a tough one. So we went through, I think everyone's journey is like a little bit obviously different and can be messy. And ours was messy. Like we did try hiring some other spaces, which didn't last very long. There was in weird places, I would go for drives and just try and find where are the dark corners of these back streets? Where do they lead? And I would stumble across there was a race course that pretty beaten up, and they had a room that we were able to use for 6 months, or a couple rooms. So we went there for a little bit, and so that was sort of a bit of a messy approach. But when we actually went to a commercial space, it was a big jump, because we had to go from, we've got 100 students, we pretty much need 200 students to make this work. And we went from a space of two rooms to 8 rooms in a waiting room. But what I sort of tell people is I had my covers band on the side, and so I paid myself next to nothing from the music teaching and just saved every dollar I could. Mm-hmm. And so it meant that I could live off the covers, live pretty cheap. And so when we moved into that place, I think I had about 50 grand sort of saved up to and that's something you struggle to do if you're just working on your own. Having a little, saved it up, was able to fit the place out, knew that it was still at risk, but I knew that I had enough to cover us for, 2 or 3 months. And then those 2 or 3 months, we needed to get out and just find as many students as possible. And we did it. Yeah.
It's a bit like the burning of the boats, isn't it? You landed, you were going to attack that that job, and there was no retreat. It was like, okay, we're doing this, which does put that forces you to go into overdrive in making sure that it does work, of course.
Yeah. And it wasn't blind faith. Like, we had strategy and ideas, and we knew that certain things worked with social media, certain things worked with school concerts and other things that we'd marketing strategies. And so we just knew we had to scale it up, and that's what worked. Yeah.
Is the studio space that you're in now, is that the same one that you moved to that you're talking about?
No. Okay. No, so I've been in this one for maybe 3.5 years. So this one's about triple the size of that last one.
Wow, okay.
And that's where we moved from.
Right, so you went from garage to the first, you did a whole lot of random places for a little while, and then you settled on your first official place, had about 8 rooms. That was the one you scaled to. You needed 200 students, I think you said, to make a Bible. Was that right? And then once that, you outgrew that place, you've got the place that you're in now, which is multi-level as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a two-story building. But I'll just add in one other step in the story, which is pretty crazy, is that we stayed in that big place with 8 rooms, and then we built, that's one site, then we built another site, and another site, and we grew to 4 sites around the city.
What?
I say build them, we built the business, not the building. Yeah, but okay. So we built to 4 locations. So when people were talking about, oh, I want to start a second location, I'm like, yep, been there. I want to start a third location, been there. Fourth location, oh, God, please don't do it, man, don't do it. So I built to 4 locations, and we built up to about, 800, 900 students.
Wow.
And then I decided, like, 2 locations were cranking, they were awesome, and 2 of them were kind of average. And I decided, man, I actually just want to, like, focus on the 2 awesome ones rather than 4. And so we scaled back to 2. And in doing that, within 6 months, you know, and we would have lost hundreds of students doing that.
Yeah,
so
I bet.
Let's say it was 800 students. I think it was a bit more, but we scaled down 2 sites, and within 6 months we grew over 1,000 to over 1,000 students by cutting in half.
That's really counterintuitive. So you lost students in the process because you closed down 2 schools.
Yeah. So let's say 200, maybe 150 to 200 students probably.
Okay. And some of them I maybe moved to the other 2 locations. I assume you got some doing that.
Yeah.
But then the demand was such, the word was out there, that those 2 locations that were remaining just shot through the roof.
Yeah, I think it was just like focused intensity on doing 2 things really well. And then in the process, we had a few more man hours and things to create some other projects. And I'm pretty entrepreneurial, so I wanted to make sure we were diversified, which is something I think all tutors should think through, you know, not just teaching private lessons, but, you know, having a presence in schools, having something online that's, you know, earning some money. You know, maybe having a charitable focus, which you can apply for funding, having sponsors, like there's a whole, you know, you need more legs to your stool than just, you know, just one or it falls over.
Yeah.
So we went to those 2 sites, and then I thought, okay, we'll work on these other projects. And then cause it grew still, and the culture was even better and more exciting. Then we kind of outgrew those 2 sites, and the opportunity was, do we just build, like, scale up those 2 sites in those places, or do we just find 1 place in the middle and just make it, like, so epic it's worth driving to? And on the basis of that, going from 4 to 2 and it growing, I decided, let's just build 1 site that's so epic it's worth driving, you know, and it's pretty much in between those 2 sites, so everyone had to drive 10, 15 minutes more.
Right.
And that building we've been in for, you know, 3.5 years. And that scaled us up to, you know, 2,000 students. And we're actually pulling back on that, though, which is a crazy thing and a whole other story. But, again, the diversification, there's certain things we're deciding. Actually, we're going to pull back on some of this. We've hit 2,000. Really cool. Wow, whatever. But in terms of long-term, we don't need to, we need to think a bit more strategy and stuff. So
right,
that's probably the longest answer to your question. Sorry, Tim.
Mate, it's a fascinating story, and I know people are going to be glued to it. I certainly am. I think it's incredible what you've done. And I was thinking then as you were talking, while it sounds kind of convoluted to have gone from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, back to 2 and now back to 1, you couldn't have just gone to the one massive place and made it work, because you probably wouldn't have been able to afford it. Would that be right? Or now that you look back on it, I should have just gone for that one anyway.
I think you're right. And there was a business story that inspired me to think like that. And it was, I don't know if you've heard of the brand House of Travel. It's like a travel agent's, and maybe it's just, it must just be New Zealand. So it's a travel agent's site. And in New Zealand, there's Wellington, the capital where I am. And then there's Auckland, which is about 8 hours drive north. That's the biggest city. And that's kind of like, if you want to succeed in business nationally in New Zealand, you have to nail Auckland in terms of a business. Now, House of Travel, what they did is they decided, we're going to stay away from Auckland. We're going to plant sites around every area of New Zealand first. And then once we're dominating the country, then we'll go to Auckland and we'll crush
attack. It literally sounds like an army maneuver.
Yeah, and they did it. And they were like, you know, 4 or 5 other big travel agencies, and they were all going for the major cities. These guys just, you know, went all around the other areas and then pounced on Auckland, and they dominated. All the other pins fell down. And so that strategy sort of inspired me a bit, thinking about how do you be really strategic about where you place yourself and how you grow that community and the impact and the trust with people so they want to come to you. And so when you do move to that one big location, one place, people want to follow you because they know it's great.
Yeah. Either I can hear my heart beating or there's a drum lesson going on somewhere near you.
Oh, can you hear that? Hopefully it doesn't mess with the recording too much. There'll be so as I mentioned, our foundation program starts at about 20 minutes, and all these teenagers arrive after school and they come and volunteer and teach these kids and mentor them and coach them for free. And so they play in a band. So I'm in our little studio upstairs, and we're probably hearing that from a couple rooms over practicing.
Yeah. It's all right. We can hear you still very clearly.
Yeah. I'll be performing.
When did your studio now is called Good Time Music Studio. Is that right? Music School?
Good Time Music Academy.
Music Academy. When did that name solidify for your business?
Right from the start. So, first we started as Good Time Drama Academy, and it's a play on words of, you know, having a fun time versus having good timing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
There we go. Yeah, most people don't get it straight away. So that was the concept, a bit of a pun. So first of all, it was Good Time Drum Academy. And then later when we decided to add other instruments, it became Good Time Music Academy.
My Music Staff is the easiest and most efficient way to run your music teaching business. This complete business-in-a-box solution has it all. I've even written a blog post on how I personally used My Music Staff to transition to automatic monthly payments. All my students now receive a monthly automatic invoice, and their credit cards are charged instantly. It couldn't be easier. From a single teacher studio to multi-teacher schools, it has you covered. It will help you effortlessly manage your students, scheduling, billing, and more. It works on any device, so you're always well-informed and in control of your business, even on the go. My Music Staff will allow you to focus more on your clients instead of being consumed by overwhelming and time-consuming administrative tasks. My Music Staff can also be used as a tool to connect your students and parents outside of their weekly lesson. Not only does it allow students to notify you of any upcoming absences and even reschedule missed lessons, it's also a great way to keep your students engaged and learning outside of their time with you. You can leave lesson notes to guide their practice, assign new repertoire, and even upload content like video tutorials, audio, sheet music, and more. This immersive tool is a great addition to any studio looking to improve their business and set themselves apart from the competition. Use My Music Staff to add additional value to your lessons and help you stand out from the crowd. There's no better time to try it for yourself. Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial. It's the perfect tool to navigate your studio through the busy back-to-school season. So looking at today now, and you've kind of mentioned that you're pulling off the marketing of new students a little bit because you've got so much else going on. But for teachers listening, well, what's been the biggest, most effective source of marketing for you for a student attraction?
Yeah, sure. So I think I'll give you the two biggest ones for us is obviously online marketing and school shows. And in a close third would be referral programs.
Okay.
So start with school shows. So we just have the formula absolutely locked down. So we go into schools. We know the language of how to get a school concert. So that's not a promotional event. It's an educational school's tour with a 5-minute plug at the end or a 2-minute plug. We know how to build the excitement. So by the end of that show, kids are just, they think that if they don't learn an instrument, their life will be crap. Basically, we've told them like how music's changed our lives. We've showed off. We've got them up on stage. We've made fun of them, you know, made them dance to funny styles of music. And then at the end, we have this awesome little pitch and we give out flyers. So we have the whole system down. So a couple of weeks ago, we did a concert and we got 97 students signed up in one concert.
Holy moly.
And we're like, that's amazing. But our record was 155 students in one concert.
Wow.
At a school of, I think, 450 kids. So,
oh, my goodness. That is amazing. So these are schools in your local area and you or your team go out and do a show off effectively.
It's a structured show, like it's walking them through different instruments and, you know, sing along songs. It's real interactive.
Yeah.
We talk about the three E's. It has to be educational. So everything has to have a purpose behind what you're showing them. They have to feel like they learned something. It has to be engaging. So you have to get the kids up and down, clapping along, singing along, and it has to be entertaining. So they have to be laughing and, kids up and make fun of them and teachers up. And
how long are these sessions?
Usually 30 to 35 minutes.
Great. And so you'll have like all the grade fives will come for a time and then the grade threes might, and you're working with the school obviously.
Yeah. So yeah, we handle everything. We hand out the promotional material and pick it up and then do the administration process. And yeah, it's all sort of polished system.
Yeah. And you've got a bus even.
Yeah, so yeah, that's another cool thing is we've got some music buses. So we started with one, now there's five.
I love how casual you are about it. Yeah, we've got five buses as well. Yeah.
Well, you're probably the same, Tim. You've built something incredible, and you know, it would only be a few years ago where it was half the size or a tenth of the size, and yeah, it becomes the new normal, but your problems become so much bigger. So.
Mm.
Tell you stories of like things that happened last year where I might have lost 10 grand or 20 grand or this project bombed and people would, it blows their mind, but you become better as a leader as you go through all these different hurdles. So
yeah,
I still have the same, I go through similar struggles just on a much bigger scale.
Yep, I understand. So you've got those three channels. You've talked about the school's outreach, you might call it. What were the other two?
So there's social media and referral programs.
What works on social for you? And is it paid or organic?
Yeah, so we do both. So social, I think the thing is too many people, they just, you know, set up ads and they drive traffic to their website. And that's what they think, social media marketing is. Or they set up, you know, they boost a post. Whereas one of the best things that we've done is this whole sort of Facebook waterfall strategy. So basically we use the Facebook pixel, which means that you can track who's, you know, been to your site and who's landed on your thank you page. So the end goal is that we want someone to actually submit for a informational pack, and then when they click that, it takes them to a thank you page. And so that there, when they land on that, Facebook tells us that's a conversion. So we run conversion ads.
Mm-hmm.
We also set it up so that our whole system of signing up takes you through online. So you can hit a Facebook ad, follow the form, go to our website, get an informational pack, click a button, enroll, fill in all the details, get sent an invoice, and land on another final Facebook page that says thank you.
Right.
So we can track that whole process as a conversion.
Wait, did you say all in Facebook?
Not in Facebook.
Okay.
But that's... Facebook can track the end of the process.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
So the waterfall strategy for us is around like setting up a bunch of ads that show X amount of times And then if someone watches those ads or those videos, we retarget them with another video. Then we retarget them with another video. So we're always giving them fresh content through a funnel. And when they hit the final thank you page, which means they've requested an info pack or they've actually signed up, it then turns those ads off. And so we're just putting money in, and we know we put in this much and it costs us this much to get a customer, and we just pump it in, and they're not seeing the same ads over and over. So that's been a big thing. And I could talk for hours on all the other.
No, that's all right. Just quickly, what's the info pack? Is that a physical posted, mailed out brochure or type thing?
No. So when you go to our website, you'll click the pack and it'll immediately pop on screen and email it to you as well.
Great. It's a digital download.
Yeah. So you got it in two places, and then we're able to follow you up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And the third one was referrals, I think you said, for the third marketing strategy.
Yeah. So, I know I share my strategy with a lot of the people that I help out, and it works in different strengths for them. But our referral strategy that's worked really well is we just believe that it's the kids that want the reward, not the parents. And so we don't try and offer any discounts or anything like that, because a kid doesn't care about their parents getting a discount. But a kid would love a $10 McDonald's voucher or a movie ticket. Mm-hmm. And so our whole referral program is literally like, sign up a friend, choose your prize. And every kind of 2-3 months, we change the prizes. We have posters everywhere and it's online, et cetera. And they get to choose between, you know, maybe this month it's movie tickets, swimming pool, shopping mall, even bowling. Wow. And we just change it around, change the color of the poster, and that's it. And a lot of it's actually just how you sell it. And I think a lot of tutors will struggle with, they've got an amazing product. They just don't know how to sell and cast vision. And I think even as I'm talking to you guys today, like, this is how I talk. I'm like excited, you know, like
there's it's infectious.
So if I walk a kid up to a poster, which has sign up a friend and get your prize, a lot of people would be like, hey man, do you have any friends? Like, do you want to win a prize? And it just doesn't work. So what I would do is be like, let's say, little John, you just go, hey John, man, what prize do you reckon you're going to choose when you sign up a friend? So you've already put it in his mind. He's signing up a friend. He's asking what prize do you want? Or we'll ask them, like, I tell my team, say to them, hey, when you sign up 5 friends, do you reckon you're going to get like 5 of the same prize, or do you reckon you're
clever? Yeah.
And so they're thinking, oh, wow, I could do this and that. It's like, well, you probably should ask 10 people, because some of them might not be able to do it. So
that's cool.
Do you even have 10 friends, man? You look like a person that's probably got 110 friends.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool, Johnny.
We workshop that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they actually, because their friends aren't making the decision for them to have lessons and they don't have emails or whatever, what are they actually, do they give, those people a form or something?
Yeah, so we've got the same poster thing as a little A5 flyer. And so the front side's got the poster part, and then the back side's got your details, your friends' details. And so they just fill in their details on it and then give it out to their friends.
Right, and when the friend brings it in, it's got their referral name on it.
And so it says literally take a pic and email it to us, or, drop it in, come see us, or whatever you want to do. And so we just get them all the time. I just gave out, before I came for this, for our interview, I just gave out $150 of shopping mall vouchers for the team to give out today, that new vouchers that my assistant just gave me.
Yeah.
So it costs us a lot of money, as you feel like, oh, there's $150, but you know that that's 15 new students that have turned up.
Right. And if each student's lifetime value is $2,000, then you would keep doing that as much as you could, right?
Peanuts.
That's really, really good. Now I'm interested, just to take a step back a little bit, what kind of teacher, in your opinion, does it take to build a music school and hire other teachers and things like that? Are there some things you've seen in your own staff that you're like, I reckon you could do this too?
Yeah. I didn't even know this question is coming to him, but I can tell you exactly what person type you need. 3 things. They need to be humble. There's a big difference between being confident versus being arrogant. And so you need to acknowledge that you have to be confident. And So you need to be confidently humble without being arrogant, obviously. So that means that you need to be so keen to learn from everyone. I mean, we're friends, Tim, because I want to learn stuff from you and you want to learn stuff from me.
Right.
And so we're both humble enough to ask for help and not pretend we know it all. So
100%.
So humility, humble, hungry, not food hungry, but hungry, work ethic hungry. You can't kick it all off by doing 40 hours a week. It just, I don't believe it's possible. I do believe you should strive for balance. And I think that comes at a different season, but at the start, you're just warming up 40 hours. You need to be doing 50, 60, 70 hours at the start to build it, to overtake everyone else. Cause you need to get people in, that want to join you and they need to be paid. And so it's a whole other thing, but
yeah,
hungry, work ethic, humble, and then people smarts. So you just need really good people skills. You're a great example of this, Tim, just the way that you interview. You talk and you listen, and you've got great people skills and people are drawn to you. So I think if you work on humble, hungry, smart, you'll be sweet.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, you've got a long road ahead, but you've got the potential. Yeah, I agree. I think those three things, I would tend to agree as well. Last one, the people skills, yeah, it can be a bit of a challenge because a lot of instrumental teachers, as you know all too well, can be quite isolated people doing their own thing in their own way. And I've met some quite unusual characters over my time who are particularly teaching piano, but I'm sure it happens in other instruments as well. So any just quick tips on getting out there if someone's feeling a little bit, you know, like they are a bit cautious or introverted or whatever it is, are there any ways to try and bridge that gap? Have you got any skills in that area?
I would say that you physically need to actually try become the person that you want to be, or the person that you know that would succeed. And if I think back to my journey, when I was at high school, I failed most of it. When I had to do a speech in English class, I almost wet my pants. I was so terrified. And now I've spoken on stages in front of thousands of people. Like I'm confident you actually can learn all these things. I'm not super smart at all. And so I think that you have to believe that those things can be taught and they can be learned. The next thing I'd say is that people follow vision as well. And I always tell our team, like, provision follows the vision. I was in a meeting this morning and said that to our foundation team. As I mentioned, we're trying to double the size of the program. We need to raise tens of thousands more dollars. And they're thinking, how are we going to do this? I'm like, guys, the provision will follow the vision. And I remember before I ran my own covers band, there was a guy called Nick who ran a different covers band. And I was just starting university and I was got the gig playing in his band. We're playing in his garage, learning the songs. And he had just moved from a town about 6 hours away, and he had run a band there. And he said to us, guys, I'm going to build the best covers band in Wellington. We're going to travel all over New Zealand. It's going to be incredible. And then he probably said some other stuff about chicks are going to love it and things like that. But the way this guy said it was just like, I'm going to do this, guys. It's going to be awesome. And I was just like,
do you want to come along for the ride?
Yeah. I was like, crap, this guy's going to do it. And he did it.
Yeah.
And I think too many of, single person studios think like, oh, I'm not a leader. I can't do this. But if almost everyone is thinking like that, you just have to stand up and talk to one of the other people when you've got a waiting list and go, hey, I'm going to build something awesome and I want you to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Want to come along for the ride? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's worse? Well, they say no, and then you go ask another person.
Yeah. And there is that aspect of resilience as well in what we do as we build businesses too. Johnny, I would love to keep talking to you, and I think we could go deeper and deeper into this, but I do want to wrap things up a little bit. But I want to give you the opportunity to talk about one of the other ways that you are building a business, which is in helping other music teachers build their music studios and music schools in particular. So tell us quickly about what you are now offering, because I know people listening too, they've heard you talk about these amazing systems you've got. I mean, you've got a script for this and a process for that and an operating procedure for this. And you actually give those away. Yeah. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So Tim, when I started, I knew nothing. I like had to figure it all out myself. Business books, taking people out for lunch, asking them questions, like making, it's like some people, how they treat their car. They know nothing about their car, and everything that they've learned about their car is because something went wrong. You know, yeah. Oh, you put oil in it. Well, I know that now because my engine blew up and it cost me $5,000. Yeah. Oh, you put water in the radiator. Oh, okay. Well, I know about that now because I've broken it. And it's the same with, you know, starting off with earning tens of thousands of dollars into building, you know, a million and a half or something, whatever you're doing now. You literally make $10,000 mistakes, $50,000 mistakes. You pour just so much money into people and resources to figure it out. And the bigger you get, the more pressure there is in today's world to just get it right, to be faster, to be more efficient, to be perfect. And I never had any of those systems. And so it was a real struggle. There were definitely some moments where there were plenty of tears and I like to say blood, sweat, tears and prayers. And so I sort of figured out, man, if I, you know, when I get to the, you know, I guess success in this type of industry, I need to be able to, you know, give resources to others coming through. And so I built a music school program, and we have our Build a Music School community called the BAM Squad. Just some of the coolest like music studio owners in the world. They're awesome. And we, I just make available like every system, and I walk people through like, this is what you should do here. Here's this resource. And we give away like an insane amount.
Everything. Yeah. Like, Johnny's been kind enough to invite me into his world, and I've been seeing the conversations that go on. The kind of people you have in there are amazing.
They're
and
cool,
the giveaways is super, super cool.
Yeah. So there's like our whole design library and, you know, in files that you can tweak and use for anything you want, and we just edit, you know, every month. There's like every book we've created. We've spent tens of thousands of dollars creating resources. We give those to everyone. They can, you know, slap their own logos and covers on, and great, your studio now has beginner books. There's we filmed all the video examples of those books. So now you can say to parents, hey, don't go learn, you know, no, you don't rubbish another studio, but you say, if you learn at our studio, you not only get the most amazing lessons with me, but you also get these awesome books that are colorful and cool, and they have reward systems and homework points and prizes, and you get video examples to help you during the week, and there's comments, and you can interact with me. There's no excuse for forgetting your homework. So there's that sort of stuff. And then there's one of the coolest things you might have seen in the group today, Zach in Canada. Like, you know, that music bus program, that's like, you know, we're doing like a crazy amount of money in that. The whole system, you know, I could have franchised it out to the world. I'm just like, here you go, Zach, here's everything. He just signed up like the superintendent for his area in Canada, and he's going to get like a music bus fully funded and potentially into like 30 schools over the next few years. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that's why you
did it. Funded by government.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not how it works in my country. So,
wow.
I could rant for ages. Just basically, if you need it, we've built it and polished it and gone through the tough stuff. I just want to save you so much time and stress and help you.
Super cool. Where can people find out more about what you offer?
Well, Tim, you might give them a link, a special link yourself for that.
Should we put that in the show notes?
Yeah, I think that's best if you click on the link Tim provides. Check it out. There's some free resources on the website, so check those out. And, there's plenty of free stuff. If you want to be in the community, there's a small cost. But, but otherwise you're good with Tim as well. we pretty much complement each other because we don't go so much into the curriculum side, which is where I first discovered you, Tim, because the curriculum you do is just insane.
Yeah.
We're more on the business stuff. So if you want to be the most incredible music teacher in the world, you go to Tim. If you want to take that and earn a heck of a lot more money and things, you can
hire a whole lot of teachers and get commercial spaces, you go to Johnny.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're really smart, you'll come to both of us.
Yeah. That's all right. Look, it's been super cool hanging out with you, Johnny. Thank you so much for your time. We'll pop all the links to things that we've mentioned today in the show notes. I'm just impressed I didn't make fun of your accent at any stage today.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that.
I've been very strong.
Yeah. My family's in Canberra, Australia, and they sound Australian. So I just can't make fun of you guys now because my own family sound like that.
When are you next over in Canberra?
My sister's getting married in July. So I'll be over there, and we may even end up being able to pop over and see you in Melbourne.
Do a loop. Yeah. I mean, you're so close. So
yeah. Yeah. And by the way, if I don't know if you read the paper recently, like a couple of days ago, New Zealand won sexiest accent award.
They won a what?
The number one sexiest accent award.
Oh no. Sexiest accent. No, Aussie you has Google that. It when you're I'm off sorry, the call, man. No, don't believe it. I bet that was run by a Kiwi.
It's a problem. Ireland was like 7. Australia, I don't know, probably 412.
Don't be ridiculous. That's funny. All right, I'll go and look it up. Thanks again, mate. It's been really cool to hang out.
Yeah, man, so cool.
See you soon.
We'll do it again.
All right, bye. Well, if you have any thoughts about building a multi-teacher music studio enterprise, then Johnny is the man to listen to. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Even if it's not something that you're looking to do, it sure is inspirational to me that someone can build such a sizable enterprise that not only works to teach students about music, but also has these fundraising and outreach programs. I think it's absolutely remarkable, and I give Johnny all my credit for what he's been able to achieve. And make sure you check out his resources if you're at all interested in finding out more about what he's up to. And for those of you in my inner circle, make sure you check out the studio walkthrough that Johnny has recorded for us. He recorded a 10-minute personalized video just for my members, walking through the entire studio with a video camera showing you everything that's going on and how it works. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's in your academy now. Next week on the podcast, we're talking about making money on the side playing piano for weddings. And my guest is going to be coming on the show to unpack how she's actually built a business that makes more money from her wedding playing business than she does from teaching now, and she loves it. Teachers are always looking for new ways to bring in income on the side, and this guest has been so successful at this. We want to unpack how she's done it and help you guys see if you can do the same thing. And for all of you tuning in, thank you again so much for being with us again this week. I really do hope that you are enjoying this season, and I can't wait to explore the next episode with you in a week's time. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams, whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the Inner Circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.